Okay, our next presenter is Pamela Erickson. Dr. Erickson holds a PhD in anthropology and a doctorate in public health. She combines these two disciplines to address issues of sexual and reproductive health among adolescents and young adults using both qualitative and quantitative research methods. She is a strong proponent of the social determinants of disease model in her work in the U.S. and abroad. Welcome, Pamela.
Nothing to disclose. On any given day, nearly one-third of black men in their 20s are under the supervision of the criminal justice system, either behind bars, on probation, or on parole. Prison is now a common and predictable experience for African-American men in their 20s, and African-American women are the fastest-growing segment of the prison population. The exit and reentry of inmates is geographically concentrated in the poorest minority neighborhoods. As many as 1 in 8 of adult male residents is sent to prison each year, and 1 in 4 is behind bars on any given day. Just refreshing our memories, we all know this, and we are actually trying to change some of this stuff these days. But this is sort of the backdrop for my looking at the question of how do such high rates of incarceration affect sex, romance, love, and family formation among emerging adults in inner city Hartford. Data come from a project that, it was a huge project that we did. We had a Philadelphia, it was our sister site, and we were looking into, CDC was really still interested in why people don't use condoms and how they talk to each other about having sex and using condoms. And so this study was really aimed at that question. And my talk today has nothing to do with CDC. They don't, you know, like, it's all my own stuff, so they're not implicated at all in my conclusions. But the questions motivating that project really were about safer sex and communication, and then to, in order to inform prevention and intervention strategies. It was sort of, it was a 5-year study, and around midterm in it, they decided that they'd just let us go ahead and do a lot of more research instead of trying to implement interventions, because they liked kind of what we were finding from the qualitative pieces. So the anthropological perspective, of course, informed our forming of the research question. And we wanted to know, really, what's the emic view of sexual and romantic relationships? What's the sexual culture among inner city young adults? And then, of course, I'm always interested in how structural factors affect the social construction of sexual and romantic relationships. This is the target population, African American, Puerto Rican. This was picked by CDC. It was a cooperative agreement sort of thing. 18 to 25, heterosexual, although several bisexual people snuck in due to the way we asked the question for this. Not currently pregnant. We used a whole suite of mixed methods, beginning with focus groups. They were sort of sequential. Some systematic cultural assessment stuff, that's free listing and pile sorting, if you don't, and consensus analysis. Sexual relationship life histories, which is where the bulk of the data I'm going to talk about today came from. Coital diaries, and then finally structured interviews using a random street intercept model that CDC developed that was really complicated and hard to do. But it was worth doing. We've talked about this in a prior article in Social Science and Medicine, and the sexual culture that kind of emerged from these different methods was one that won't surprise anybody: early sexual initiation, many different kinds of relationships for different things, for sex, for romance, for fun, for access to resources, often money, maybe drugs, maybe kids. Multiple partners were normative. Pregnancy was usually unplanned, but parenthood was welcomed. And early childbearing was also very common. One of the overarching themes was this real lack of trust and a sense of uncertainty and durability in relationships. And the qualitative research, particularly those life histories, in which what we really ask people to do is tell us the story of their romantic lives, from their first important to the current one, and probed a lot about how they got into those relationships and other things like that. And what really came out of those as I was reading through, we have like 60 of them, I think, as I was reading through them, was that incarceration was really a common experience that significantly affected relationships and family building. The focus groups revealed a relationship terminology that was based on jail terms, and the SRIs, those are the survey, the in-depth interviews, revealed that 43% of the 62 participants talked about the impact of jail on their relationships. So that's, I mean, that's a lot. Shouldn't have been surprising, but it just sort of hits you in the face when you start reading these transcripts. We added questions to our final survey, much to the dismay of CDC, who thought it was irrelevant to our project. I hate to, I mean, they were good, but it was a fight sometimes to get these things in. Really just to assess the extent of incarceration in our population. And 60% of male participants had been in jail at least once. 25% of females, same story. And there were no ethnic differences. So Puerto Ricans and African Americans had the same sort of incarceration rates in Hartford. The data I'm using is only the Hartford data. So high rates of incarceration affect sexual culture in all aspects, from initiation of relationships to breakups to partnering, parenting, and that jail terminology pervades things. So there's a relationship type that's actually called jailbird. Some of you may be familiar with this. And that's like someone you've done known, and he telling you, I'm about to get locked up. I got to do my biz for 3 months, so when I come out, we bang, bang. But you keep contact with the person the whole time they're in jail. And when they get out, it's all that stress, and he's going to pound it. So he's kind of like a shag partner in some respects? No, he's a jail partner. Is that different? Yes. So this sort of permeates a lot of the discussion. And so finally, one of the women says, basically, that's most of what they do. They come home, hop 2 months, go to jail, 2-3 years, come back, another 2-3 months, go back to jail. So this makes it easy to see, if you're involved with somebody like that, that there's a lack of permanence to the relationship. Men are often worried about legal consequences of having sex with underage women. So this one young man told his girlfriend, kind of remember when you were 13 and I was 21, I could have gone to jail for your ass. So they're aware of those sorts of relationships too. New relationships are affected by uncertainty due to incarceration. A young African-American woman. I met Jamal like in between what I was going through with Brad. We had sex, and so the next day I went for, you know, the 72-hour pill. So, and he never called me. So basically, I thought it was just a one-night stand, and come to find out, he was in jail. He had his cousin call me, and that's how I found out. A young man talking about a girlfriend of his. Basically, we were still talking at the time, but then she moved to Florida, met up with a local drug dealer, and he got her pregnant, and right now she's in jail because she took something to the airport for her man. After she got pregnant, I was like, oh my God, she got pregnant by somebody else? She never really cared. Incarceration can also end relationships. Another young man said of this young woman he was kind of seeing, we had sex every day for 2 weeks straight, so I guess it was good. And then she got locked up. She went to jail for something. And the wrong kind of drugs inside her house. I mean, if you got weed, you're going to go to jail for a long time. If it's meth or something else, you're going away for a long time. I listened to the tapes, too. So. So she's in. So that's how our relationship ended. I'm not going to write. You're not my pen pal. Don't call me. And longer-term relationships are also affected by this uncertainty of incarceration. a young woman, she said, we were in a relationship for, what, a year, till he started going to jail, so I ended up not messing with him. Another young woman, I definitely thought I was going to be in a serious relationship. I don't think he knew he was going to jail. He was in there for 18 months. It's too long for me. So incarceration is implicated in the culture of multiple partners, as well as this kind of distrust and everything else that's going on. And then unintended pregnancy and parenting. Like, I knew where he hung out and stuff like that, but we didn't know a lot about each other. We just knew that one day we was going to have sex with each other. And one day we did, and we both got a child out of it. Then I didn't see him again. I didn't have sex with him again, and he's in jail. He's in and out of jail. So incarceration affects parenting and child rearing and, you know, just relationships of men and women to their children as well. A Puerto Rican young woman was talking about her relationship. We knew we were going to have Yesenia. Like, we knew we would eventually have a baby, and we waited till Yesenia was 3, and we started all over again, and I had Serena last year. But Serena, he fucked up. That's when he was doing his cheating and shit. He was in there when I gave birth to her, but we planned her. We knew before he went to jail that time that I was pregnant. So I don't ask him for much. You're not here. My sister-in-law plays the role of my baby daddy. She gives me whatever I need. I married into a good family, at least when it came to take care of my kids financially wise. They can take care of my kids, so thank God for that. And he's just a fuck around. But of all the guys I've had, he's like the worry. He's the one understanding me the most, but fucks up the most too. And he's always in and out of jail. I think it's fucked up that my kids got to grow up without a father. But he's told me that if he gets jail time, for me to live my life, by which he means have sex with other men, when he comes out, he'll come get what he left, and we'll start over where we left off, because he knows I'm not waiting for years. I didn't put you there. You did it to yourself. So you go ahead with your business. I'm not going to have no kids with nobody else. I won't bring another man into your bed, but I cannot guarantee you or promise you that I will be faithful. And he understands that. And that is a common refrain that we hear over and over in these relationships. If one or the other goes to jail, it's okay to have side relationships, but the expectation is to get back together once they come out, if they're in more committed relationships. If I sleep with someone else, I don't let feelings get attached. I mean, they talk about falling in love almost like catching feelings, like a disease, because my baby daddy's in the picture. He's always going to be in the picture, and nothing's going to change that. Can't nobody take his place. So she's really committed to her children's father, and she'll take him back when he comes out. But from reading the whole text of her interview, she does feel free to have other partners. And while he's inside and worries about the impact of her children not having a father around, so it was very depressing reading these things. And then she also says, I tried so many times to get rid of him. I moved to Connecticut trying to get rid of him. That's how the fuck that motherfucker find me so fast. Like, it's scary. It's scary because he's so determined. I know I love him. I won't get rid of him. I hate him. He's done a lot of bad, but I won't get rid of him. So she loves him, hates him. Maybe she fears him a little bit. She'll have other partners, but she'll accept him when he comes out because he's a jailbird. And then it can work for some. There was a young Puerto Rican man his girlfriend got pregnant, and then he went to jail, and then he was in jail for 4 years, and she was stayed true to him, brought the kids to see him and everything else. So, I mean, it can work out sometimes. In conclusion, I think this research illustrates the compounding impact of this turnstile relationship where people go in and out of prison that many men and women in our study endured, and that further increases the already unstable and unpredictable nature of life in the hyper-ghetto. Incarceration results in frequent breakups that exacerbate the normative pattern of having multiple relationships by alternately adding and removing people from the sexual pool and cycling them in and out of relationships and families. Moreover, men are perceived by women to have the right to sex once they come out. And this, I didn't get to talk about this a lot, but it's another pervasive feature. He was in, he needs sex when he comes out, and it's our duty to give it to him. In addition, the partner of someone in jail is entitled to take side partners during the incarceration period. And children grow up without their father's presence, and families are really seriously undermined, I think, by this whole turnstile phenomenon. And once in the turnstile, it's hard to get out because of poverty and limited economic opportunities. We redacted all of from the transcripts, all of the things people said that they did to go to jail, but it was mostly drugs and sort of larceny, stealing. Not except in a few cases. poverty alone makes life insecure and unstable. Jail time magnifies the problem, forcing people into acting for now rather than planning for the future. Elsewhere, we've described this endemic of STIs, early and unplanned childbearing, and poverty. And I think we need to add incarceration to this mixture because it acts really synergistically and caustically with this endemic and begs further attention from us as public health professionals. And this endemic, I think, is really intimately tied to the sexual and reproductive health disparities faced by inner city young adults and also adolescents, I would add. So thank you very much.